Though there were sharp partisan disputes over some conclusions, virtually all of the Joint Committee members agreed that the entire Iran initiative was rife with mistakes and, in the end, almost a total failure.
We are today releasing to the public the joint report of the Senate and House Select Committees on the Iran-Contra investigation.
President Reagan is accused in the Congressional Iran-Contra report of letting his staff break the law and violate cardinal principles of the Constitution.
The committees conclude that the officials who participated in this scandal showed disdain for our laws and our constitutional system of government. They ran a government outside government. They conducted a secret foreign policy and concealed it through a concerted campaign of dishonesty and deception. And when the affair began to unravel, they attempted to cover up their deeds.
The committees believe then that in the constitutional responsibility to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, the president failed.
We believe that the president is responsible for the actions and attitudes of his staff. We conclude that he created, or at least tolerated, an environment where an illegal diversion of funds to the Contras was viewed as consistent with his policies. An environment that enabled senior advisors to take some risk with the law, to deceive the American people, the Congress, and even the executive branch colleagues in the pursuit of their goals.
The majority opinion in the report says evidence is inconclusive whether the president knew of the diversion, but that he should have known.
The committees have heard no testimony that the president was told of the use of the arms proceeds for the Contras. But the question of whether the president knew of the diversion is not the final word on the president's responsibility.
And although it says Mr. Reagan failed his constitutional duty, the report does not call this an impeachable offense.
There are different levels of malfeasance and misfeasance. And I personally believe that it takes a high level of such to constitute an impeachable offense. We do not believe that the dereliction of duty that we have cited would constitute such offense.
Three Republican moderates joined the majority Democrats in the report. Sources say its wording was softened at their request, for example, deleting a claim that President Reagan condoned a cover-up.
The President of the United States, who I admire, who I support, who I consider a friend, has said on two occasions after this hearing concluded in this room that the buck stops at his desk, that he is accountable for his administration, that he is responsible for what his administration does. The committee accepts that view of the president.
The majority report says there is a cloud over Attorney General Edwin Meese for his investigation of the affair a year ago. It says he did not move fast enough and failed to have note takers present at key interviews. The report also accuses him of misstatements, but it does not charge him with covering up or lying. It says the president was ill-served by Meese for not advising him to notify Congress about the arms deals, and it suggests Meese may have tried to cover up his role in a possibly illegal hostage ransom plan financed by Texas industrialist H. Ross Perot.
He was in a conflict of interest position at the very least. You know, because here he is, the chief law enforcement
officer. There are some people calling for him to leave. Are you joining that?
Well, let's put it this way. If you added up the pluses and minuses, this is a president's decision, obviously. I would say that the attorney general is a pretty heavy load to carry if he's your friend.
If the president said, should I keep him, you would say, let him go?
Oh, I would give him that advice, yeah.
I think that's silly, and I think the president's statement answers all of that.
We say that the inquiry departed from standard investigative techniques after the discovery of the diversion memo. And then we state the lapses, quote, places a cloud over the attorney general's investigation. As far as I am concerned, That cloud is a cloud that deals with competence and professionalism.
I don't think there's been a criminal conspiracy here. As a matter of fact, I don't see any banality. I don't see any criminal intent. And I certainly don't see any corruption here.
The report says there is no evidence Vice President Bush knew of the diversion. It casts doubt on former National Security Advisor John Poindexter's testimony, including his statements he could not remember key facts. The report criticizes the late CIA Director William Casey for his involvement in the diversion. New evidence in the report from Israel says fired White House aide Oliver North said as early as December 1985 he needed to keep selling arms to Iran to generate funds for the Contras. The report implies North wanted to continue arms sales to Iran even if no hostages were released. Saying U.S. officials were hoodwinked, the report discloses that some U.S. arms intended to bolster Iranian moderates actually went to radical Revolutionary Guards. And it says one allegedly moderate intermediary for the arms deals, in fact, was identified as a terrorist who had masterminded the kidnapping of Beirut CIA official William Buckley, who was later murdered. The report urges tighter curbs on presidential power to conduct undercover operations. It recommends he notify Congress within 48 hours of any covert action, that he sign all approval of such actions, and that he appoint no military officer as his national security advisor. Due to the destruction of evidence and the death of Casey, congressional investigators never were able to answer the key question, did the president know of the diversion? They spent $4 million investigating, more money than the Contras ever got from the diversion.
It started out as a witch hunt. It proceeded as a witch hunt, and the final report indicates that indeed it was a witch hunt.
Out of these hearings, the congressional report on the Iran-Contra affair is under fire. Eight dissenting Republicans accuse the majority Democrats of hysterical conclusions. Among them, allegations that President Reagan may have known of the diversion, that he failed to see that laws were obeyed, and that his administration touched off a grave constitutional crisis.
In my judgment, the majority report, I don't think we can call it a Democratic report because three Republicans signed it. It's the majority report, is a partisan political document. Whether it's recognized as such by the Republican signatories or not, I don't know. That's their problem. But it is a bitterly political document. It resolves every doubt against the administration. The administration gets the benefit of no innuendos, no nuances. The administration is drenched with guilt, legal and factual and spiritual.
A summary of the 100-page Republican dissenting view was leaked in advance, provoking criticisms of Republican intentions.
In its effort to gloss over, to minimize, to whitewash any involvement by the president or his administration, They have been unwilling to even say of the president what the president has said of himself, that he is responsible.
Yes, much to be criticized. Yes, many faults. Yes, some wrongs. Yes, there are things that have to be corrected. And yes, the president has said that he takes responsibility. How many times does he have to say that before we beat him into submission?
Majority Democrats, joined by three moderate Republicans, differ with the dissenting Republicans on key issues. Among them, is it true, as President Reagan says, he did not know of the diversion of Iran arms profits to the Contras? Majority and minority agree there's no evidence one way or the other, but they disagree over how to interpret testimony of those involved in the possibly illegal diversion.
Throughout the conduct of my entire tenure at the National Security Council, I assumed that the president was aware of what I was doing and had, through my superiors, approved it.
You did not tell the president of the United States.
I did not. On this whole issue, you know, the buck stops here with me.
Admiral Poindexter testified under oath. It is now up to the special prosecutor or history itself to determine whether Admiral Poindexter was correct in his statement. It is not for me to advise you what I believe. I'm just citing the facts.
It's a very difficult statement to believe. Admiral Poindexter saw the president every day. His office was a few steps away from the president's office. He had, after all, good news for the president, which was that the Contras were being supported. Nonetheless, in my judgment, I accept Admiral Poindexter's word.
Let me state that there is not one shred of evidence before this committee that the president has done anything but tell us the truth on that point. Now, let me also add, as a lawyer, it is almost impossible to prove a negative. It all is doubly impossible to prove a negative when documents were shredded. But this committee does not infer, imply, or suggest that it has any evidence whatsoever. If people in the country wish to disbelieve the president or disbelieve witnesses, that, of course, is their privilege. But this committee could not speculate as to that. We then say if the president did not know, he should have.
Another key question, was there widespread illegality in the administration? Minority Republicans say the president and his staff made mistakes in judgment, nothing more. A third key question, was there a systematic cover-up?
The president's policies were to sell arms secretly to Iran and to maintain the Contras, body and soul. These policies were carried out in violation of our laws and established procedures of government. The president's top aides concealed and covered up these activities through false statements to the public and to the Congress. These aides shredded and altered documents, including a presidential finding. These aides believed they were carrying out the president's policies. The president himself misinformed the public about his aides' activities on several occasions. He has yet to condemn their actions.
Democratic report takes the evidence farther than it warrants in terms of trying to portray the president, the administration, as having engaged in cover-up and so forth, and I just don't think that's a valid judgment.
I am a Republican, and I'm a loyal Republican, but I think the minority evidently believes that Republicans somehow don't want the truth laid out. My Republican constituents want the truth laid out. I have looked at that report carefully, and I'm regretful to say that I'm reminded of Adlai Stevenson's great remark about the press. This particular report is one in which the editors separated the wheat from the chaff, and unfortunately have printed the chaff. It is a pathetic report.
I believe the Iran-Contra affair raises important questions of policy and law. The minority report attempts to explain all that away by suggesting that it's much ado about nothing. I disagree. And I would hope the American people would disagree as well.
The majority report whitewashes the Congress of the United States and its problems with regard to what happened here. Now, had the Congress not been trying to interfere with presidential prerogatives, had literally they had not sent so many different inconsequential sometimes and very consequential at other times, but contradictory messages, I don't think we would have ever been in the mess that this thing turned out to be.
Congressional interference in foreign policy, more than micromanaging, vacillating, oscillating, inconstant, changing its mind, playing with people's lives down in Central America. The congressional supremacists in foreign policy are utterly thrilled with the majority report.
The most fundamental split between majority and minority is on whether the president and some of his top aides only made mistakes or broke the law. While that debate continues, the White House says President Reagan is now preparing written answers to questions from independent counsel Lawrence Walsh. He's the man who will decide later whether to prosecute anyone in the Iran-Contra affair.
I don't think there's anything much new in there, and I think the facts kind of speak for themselves. It's to the extent that there were any comments, I think it's probably a great job of Monday morning quarterbacking.
While the president went about ceremonial duties, spokesman Marlon Fitzwater issued a statement saying the president did not violate any laws. Even the majority report does not so state. However, congressional investigators conclude the president was fully engaged, and a committee source says his support for the Contras so fully demonstrated that Colonel North and Admiral Poindexter received a message about what they ought to do, even if the president did not specifically send it.
The Congressional Committee contradicts the earlier finding of the Tower Board that a lax presidential style allowed others to freelance foreign policy.
The Tower Report on several occasions mentioned management style, the fact that the president was laid back, but our investigation indicated that it was not management style. And as I indicated in my opening statement, it was his failure to carry out his responsibility to take care that the laws were followed.
Spokesman Fitzwater calls the report subjective and notes it is not unanimous. White House strategy is business as usual, the Reagan tactic from the start.
I think it's probably a great job of Monday morning quarterbacking. Looks a lot different when you're actually on the scene.
What about
but
you,
beside that, I think that there wasn't anything particularly new in the report that I found.
Asked his view of the report, the president only quipped, "You don't want to hear." His spokesman said no presidential response is planned, and the president will stand by past statements, such as his March 4th acknowledgement that arms were traded for hostages.
There are reasons why it happened, but no excuses. It was a mistake.
Yet in July, the president said when the hearings ended, he would stand on the roof and yell to explain his views. He has not done so.
The president has also failed to use his bully pulpit to condemn the lies, to condemn the destruction of government documents, or to condemn the cover-up that have been matters of record for months. By his continuing silence, the president creates the impression that he does not find these actions objectionable.
There remains bitter partisanship in Congress over the president's role.
It just kills the majority to have to admit there was no smoking gun, although they're still looking under every chair and every couch and every closet they can find.
The committee had extensive access to presidential notes, but the president was not interviewed. Committee sources judged you can't cross-examine the president. Former National Security Advisor Judge William Clark has asked the president to pardon North End Poindexter, the two White House aides largely behind the Iran-Contra scheme. Spokesman Fitzwater refuses to disclose the president's view on pardons, but says discussion now would be premature. Fitzwater adds the president wants independent counsel Lawrence Walsh to finish his investigation.
How are you?
In spite of his obvious interest in the case, independent counsel Lawrence Walsh will not be able to read the Iran-Contra reports right away. Because several of the Congressional Committee witnesses were granted limited immunity, Walsh is barred from relying on their testimony.
There's no question that the immunization of certain witnesses has caused us great difficulties.
By all accounts, Walsh's separate investigation is an exhaustive one. He's reportedly seeking indictments for, among other charges, conspiracy, misuse of government funds, and obstruction of justice. So far, two minor figures, conservative fundraisers Carl Channel and Richard Miller, have pleaded guilty to tax violations connected to the affair. But prosecutors are focusing on the major players, most notably Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North.
There was probably not another person on the planet Earth as shocked as I was to hear that someone thought it was criminal. And I can tell you that that shock was compounded when I heard later that there was to be an independent counsel.
Other targets of the independent counsel are said to include former National Security Advisors Robert McFarlane and John Poindexter, and private businessmen Richard Secord and Albert Hakim, who handled millions for both Iran arms and contra funding deals. Officials only recently received Swiss banking records, and it will take months to sift through them. There will be other investigations. Several congressional committees, including House and Senate Intelligence, say they intend to pick up where the Iran-Contra panels left off.
Well, there are a number of strands, I think, that are left dangling. One certainly relates to the private funding. We were not able to pursue all that we would like to pursue there. Secondly, we never got hold of the Swiss bank records. And they could lead us to additional information. We make a large number of recommendations in the report, which will require follow-up by several different committees. I think probably the major recommendations will be referred to the intelligence committees relating to how we conduct covert actions.
President Reagan is still answering questions.
written answers to written questions submitted by the independent counsel more than a month ago. A former member of the Watergate prosecution team is optimistic Walsh will get the full story.
My own guess would be that the criminal investigative process has a better chance of getting to the bottom of this than even the congressional joint hearings did.
It's impossible for me to believe that a lieutenant colonel with 18 years in the Marine Corps suddenly wound up in the bottom of the White House and got himself a little phone booth and operated a worldwide operation that had military and diplomatic and sophisticated weapons
so
and millions of dollars. I don't know that he was a patsy, although the testimony shows quite clearly there was discussion about who was going to take the hit, who's going to take the spear.
It's a tedious process. Indictments are not expected until January, at the earliest. Then, assuming there are no presidential pardons, court action could take months, or even years. Report, the big story this week. This is Don Miller, CNN.